The last case this morning is 2020-1513 Mahoning County Bar Association versus Joseph Raymond Masaccio. For the respondent, Mr. Johnson.
Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. The respondent in this case was charged with violating Rule 8.4C of the Ohio Rules of Professional Conduct, which prohibits a lawyer from engaging in dishonesty, fraud, deceit, or misrepresentation. This is one of the most serious violations an Ohio lawyer can be charged with because it implicates his or her integrity. As we have laid out in our brief, misrepresentation means intentional misrepresentation and not the type of negligent misrepresentation that's present in this case. In every other notary case, the lawyer either notarized a signature he didn't witness or have acknowledged, or falsely notarized his own signature as someone else's, or notarized a blank document intending that it be signed outside of his presence and used. In other words, the lawyer intended to circumvent the requirements of notarization by making misrepresentations about the circumstances of execution. He or she engaged in intentional misconduct. This case is different. Respondent intended to witness his client sign the documents he prepared, and his misrepresentation was negligent, not intentional. There are four ways to demonstrate that a negligent misrepresentation does not violate Rule 8.4C. First, the other conduct prohibited by that rule is all intentional misconduct. The word misrepresentation must be read in context. Second, the notary statute itself, Ohio Revised Code Section 147.141, prohibited acts, prohibits, quote, affixing the notary's signature to a blank form of an affidavit or certificate of acknowledgement and delivering that form to another person with the intent that it be used as an affidavit or acknowledgement. This language is quoted at page 7 of our brief. That is not the case here. Third, other rules found in the Ohio Rules of Professional Conduct involving misrepresentation require intent. Rule 3.3A prohibits knowingly making a false statement of fact or law to a tribunal. Rule 4.1A prohibits knowingly making a false statement of material fact or law to a third person in the course of representing a client. A negligent misrepresentation of law or fact to a tribunal is not prosecuted under Rule 8.4C, and the same is true of a negligent misrepresentation to a third party. And fourth and finally, this court's prior opinion in Disciplinary Counsel versus Mecklenburg. Mecklenburg was pulled over and cited in Indiana for driving under the influence, and his driving privileges were suspended for failing to submit to a breath test during that stop. At the time, his Ohio license had expired. Mecklenburg went to the Ohio BMV to renew his expired Ohio license and signed a pre-printed form stating that his driving privileges had not been suspended and that he had no pending citations in any state. This was untrue. It was stipulated that Mecklenburg had acted on the advice of counsel and that he had failed to read the entire application before signing it. The Board of Professional Conduct found that in light of the fact that he had sought and acted on the advice of counsel and signed a pre-printed form, quote, his conduct did not constitute an intentional act of dishonesty, fraud, deceit, or misrepresentation. This court adopted that finding and dismissed the 8.4C charge. So that decision unambiguously stands for the proposition that the misrepresentation prohibited by Rule 8.4C is an intentional misrepresentation, and intentional misrepresentation is not present here. The cases cited by the board in its two cases cited in the report and recommendation were the Cincinnati Bar versus Thompson and Cincinnati Bar versus Gottesman. In Thompson, the lawyer had notarized two affidavits for his former law partner, and the former law partner was going to try and have a business associate who he was in a dispute with sign those affidavits and thereby get his name removed from two Kentucky liquor licenses. So the lawyer, Mr. Thompson, notarized those blank affidavits, left the dates blank, knowing that his partner was going to go get them executed and then use them for a purpose. Obviously factually distinct from what's happened here. In Gottesman, the respondent was presented.
How, in the Mecklenburg case, can you help me, how does acting on the advice of counsel translate to unintentional misrepresentation?
I think the board found that the combination of the stipulation that he hadn't entirely read the form and that he had talked to a lawyer before he went to get his Ohio license reinstated obviated any intent to make a misrepresentation. That in the quote that is in our brief, that was the board's conclusion that based on those two facts, he didn't intentionally make a misrepresentation.
Thank you.
In Gottesman, the lawyer was presented with a signed power of attorney, and the person who brought it to him said, "This is my wife's signature." Gottesman notarized it. It was used to borrow $75,000, and in fact, the signature was forged. So Gottesman knew when he notarized that affidavit that he didn't know that the signature was by the person who purported to sign it. It wasn't acknowledged in front of him, and he knowingly violated the notary statute. There are two cases cited by the relator most heavily, Gottesman, which we've just discussed, and Columbus Forest Association versus Daugherty. Daugherty is about a liquor license as well. There, the lawyer provided his client with a blank application for two temporary liquor permits, which would allow the client to sell liquor for 48 hours during a special event hosted by a nonprofit. The client returned the application to the lawyer with a signature purporting to be the signature of the nonprofit's president. Respondent notarized the signature and then submitted the applications. As a result, a liquor permit was issued. The signature turned out to be forged. So here the lawyer knowingly and intentionally notarized the document he didn't see signed or acknowledged, and he submitted it. In the instant case, the respondent did not intend to have his powers of attorney signed outside his presence. He didn't tell his client to do that. He intended to return and witness them being signed.
But counsel, I understand his motive for, you know, here's the documents, take a look at them, clients with your children, whatever. And I'll come back then and I'll answer any questions and we will execute any documents or I'll make any changes you need. That's pretty much the scenario I think that I understand. But they never contacted him after that. Neither the husband or wife, nor I believe he was dealing with the son, Robert. Is that correct?
That's true.
Okay, nobody got back with him. And then there was an intervening attorney-client relationship facilitated by the daughter.
Correct?
All right. So he knows that he's got these documents out there and they've got his notarization on it. Why wouldn't he have hold them back or ask them to be destroyed?
That's clearly what he should have done. And that's the negligent conduct that he engaged in. He dropped these documents off on July 28th and they signed new documents with a different lawyer a month later. So the documents that he left there were revoked as a matter of law when the new documents were executed. And there's no evidence that this particular document, which was the only one that was ever signed, was ever used. So he clearly should have followed up.
All right. And your client, when testifying on this, was upfront, honest, made no deceptive responses, correct?
Absolutely. When he first became aware of this document, signed 2 years after he had dropped them off at the house, he went back to his office. He was deposed in a will contest case. It was presented to him as an exhibit. He went back to his office and self-reported that day. So there may have been other parts of the code of professional conduct that this negligent conduct violated. He perhaps could have been charged with a lack of competence under 1.1 or lack of diligence under 1.3. But 8.4C questions his integrity, his honesty. It involves honesty, deceit, fraud, misrepresentation. And this is an outstanding lawyer with a spotless record who has been a prosecutor. The letters of character letters that support him demonstrate his character. He shouldn't be saddled with this for this kind of a negligent misrepresentation. And this is a very unusual case in the constellation of notary cases. It is more akin to Mecklenburg than any of the other notary cases because everybody else intended to do something wrong. So if there are no other questions, I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
All Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Slipsky.
Chief Justice, and may it please the court. My name is Ron Slipsky, and I am here today on behalf of the Mahoning County Bar Association. As Mr. Johnson alluded, the parties are before the court on respondents' objection to the report and recommendation of the Board of Professional Conduct. The Board of Professional Conduct found by clear and convincing evidence that respondent violated 8.4C and indicated that he should receive a public reprimand for his conduct. We urge the court to find that the board made the correct conclusion in its report and recommendation. I would begin by observing, first of all, that the rules of professional conduct are not designed to punish attorneys. The rules of professional conduct, one of the major purposes of the rules of professional conduct, is to protect the public. This case illustrates that purpose. This case illustrates the danger of the kind of conduct that respondent engaged in, and it creates a threat to the public. We have no ill will to respondent, but given the cases that are there and the kind of activity that occurred here, we believe that a sanction is appropriate. We agree with respondent in his brief when he talks about the fault line, that there's a fault line that runs through all of these 8.4C cases. We agree that there is a fault line, but the fault line is not in regards to whether or not the respondent engaged in a misrepresentation or not. The fault line is, having engaged in that misrepresentation, what should the sanction be? And as I hope to explain as we move forward, the issue is, should it be a public reprimand, or should there actually be a suspension of his law license?
Counsel, couldn't the also the outcome be that we find no violation? It doesn't have to be what's the punishment here, not punishment, but what's the sanction here. It could be that this court deems this not to be an 8.4 violation.
That's correct. And I hope to demonstrate that it is a violation because there was a misrepresentation here, a false statement, and the potential harm to the public is illustrated by this case.
Okay, isn't Mr. Johnson correct that there has to be some kind of intentional misrepresentation, that there has to be just a negligent misrepresentation isn't enough?
He's wrong. All of the cases talk about.
So if I'm talking to a judge and I say I'm an attorney and I say that adamantly that yes, I did file this document. I find out later on that I didn't. I should have checked with my assistant and made sure there was filed, but it wasn't. So I misrepresented something to the judge. That wouldn't be a violation, would it?
No. And the difference is we are dealing here with a notarization. When someone notarizes a document, it becomes a self-authenticating document. And in this case, that self-authenticating document, unsigned, goes out, okay? What Mr. Maseko does is he relinquishes control of that document.
But the misrepresentation, isn't it? I mean, you're talking about the potential for harm here, but the issue is whether there is an intent that has to go beyond negligence, that has to go with the misrepresentation. That really is not a, I mean, what you're getting to is that in this case, the misrepresentation could have had bad effects, but that's different than whether something's negligent or not.
Well, all of the cases talk about whether or not the respondent followed the rules of notarization, and where the only thing that the respondent did was not follow the rules in notarizing a document, that's all that he did wrong, a public reprimand issued in every single one of these cases.
But Mr. Slipsky, the false statement or the misrepresentation was actually the language, assuming he had a stamp. And so it was the language in that jurat and perhaps his signature, because I'm assuming he signed it as well.
Yes, that's the misrepresentation. That's a full stop. There's a misrepresentation there.
Now, if he had not signed it and just used his stamp, would that still be a misrepresentation?
That's a good question, Your Honor. I would have to research that. I suspect no, because the stamp would be meaningless without the signature.
Thank you.
Okay, so if I can try to get back on track here. I will skip ahead then, since we covered most of this in terms of the potential harm. So what he does is, let me skip forward to the Thompson and Goetzman cases. The Thompson case is the one that is most like the case at Barr. Of all of the cases cited by the party, Cincinnati Barr versus Thompson. In that case, Thompson notarized two blank documents for a former law partner. That's all that he did. Unlike here, the documents were never signed. So here it's even more egregious. But the court pointed out in Thompson that there was no evidence of any attempt to deceive anyone. There was no dishonesty involved whatsoever. It was exactly as it is here. This violation of how you notarize a document.
But I guess this is, I guess, what I'm troubled with a little bit. I mean, I think we all can agree he violated the rules about notarizing a document, but that's not what he's charged with. He's charged with violating Rule 8.4C that says it's professional misconduct to engage in conduct involving dishonesty, fraud, deceit, or misrepresentation. And I think we all agree that this can't be any misrepresentation. It has to have some kind of, has to be some kind of scienter there beyond just negligence. So how does doing the notary thing wrong get you to conduct with dishonesty, fraud, deceit, misrepresentation?
Well, he signed a statement that said, and I quote, "This document was acknowledged before me this 28th day of July, 2017 by Mary Lou Durek." He signed that and notarized that. In our opinion, that is a misrepresentation. It's false. He did not do that. And 8.4C indicates that it is unprofessional conduct for a lawyer to engage in a misrepresentation.
So anytime a lawyer misrepresents something, they have violated that rule, whether they intended to or not.
I can't speak for all the cases that may be out there, Your Honor, but in this case where he signed this statement, this is a misrepresentation. That is.
And at the time he signed that and notarized it, he knew there was no signature on there that he represented was there, correct?
Correct. And he has subsequently admitted that that statement was false. And that is a misrepresentation in our opinion.
Because he probably could have left the documents and, depending on how it was situated, said, I'm not going to leave the signature page here since I've already put this on here and I'll wait for you to look at it. Or as the chief said, he could have just followed up and said, hey, did you sign those documents?
Correct. And that would have alleviated the problem.
It would not have alleviated the problem, because if he called up and said, hey, did you sign those documents? And they said, oh yeah, they're all done. Then it's still a false statement because he didn't want witness her signature.
That's correct, Your Honor. And in that regard, I would refer the court to Mahoney County Bar Association versus Melnick. In that case, respondent was a member of the Army Judge Advocate General Corps. He was called up for duty when the war in Iraq broke out. He was facing a summary judgment by opposing counsel. He prepared some affidavits and he asked a trusted friend to circulate the affidavits. The friend circulated the affidavits, brought them back to him, and three of them were signed. He did not ask for signatures. When he returned from Iraq, he was ordered to Virginia. And in that case then, before he would use the affidavit, he called each of the people who signed it to confirm that that was in fact their signature and that everything in the affidavit was true. This court nonetheless found, okay, and this goes directly to the to your question, Chief Justice, this court still found that there was a violation. And he received a public reprimand because the only thing that he did wrong, again, was the way he notarized the document.
But what if everything had gone exactly as the attorney planned? If he had pre-notarized these, but then an hour later the client had signed it, would there be a violation? And he witnessed the signature. So he witnessed, so everything was accurate an hour later, but it wasn't accurate when he first affixed his stamp and signature to it.
I believe there would still be a technical violation. Whether or not it gets prosecuted is another question, but it's still a misrepresentation. When he made it, it was false. And you know, that brings me to there's a line of cases, but beginning with Feuerbach. In Feuerbach, the court expressed its concern that lawyers were seeing more and more cases of dishonesty with lawyers, with their clients, and with the court. So the court announced a rule in Feuerbach, a strict rule, that anytime anyone violates 8.4c, they're going to get an actual suspension. Fast forward 10 years to the Doherty case. In the Doherty case is like this one. There was nothing done wrong in that case other than failing to follow the rules of a notary. In Doherty was a 4-3 decision, a split decision, that even there, the three dissenting judges still felt that the person should receive an actual suspension. The majority of four felt that a public reprimand was appropriate. And that case is cited in the Thompson case. My time's running out. I would like to speak to the two cases in their brief that respondent rely upon most. And the first one is Mecklenburg. Of all of the cases cited, it is our position that Mecklenburg is most unlike this case. Of all of the cases, it is most unlike this case. In Mecklenburg, Mecklenburg did not notarize a blank form. In Mecklenburg, Mecklenburg did not notarize anyone else's signature. He did not acknowledge anyone else's signature. The document that he signed in Mecklenburg was not self-authenticating. In Mecklenburg, he was not acting either as a notary or as an attorney representing someone.
But he was an attorney.
He was an attorney, yes. And so in Mecklenburg, the court said, in light of the facts that Mecklenburg had sought and acted on the advice of counsel and signed a pre-printed form provided by the Bureau of Motor Vehicles, his conduct did not constitute an intentional act of dishonesty, fraud, deceit, or misrepresentation. I think the court in that case essentially negated this concept of intentionality because he was acting on the advice of counsel. If you're acting on the advice of counsel and counsel tells you it's okay to sign that form and it's not a misrepresentation, it's a little bit hard to claim that the person made a misrepresentation. However, going to, I think it was the Chief Justice who spoke up, Mecklenburg, although 8.4C was dismissed, he was found to have violated 8.4H. And his action adversely reflected on his fitness to practice law. The other case that they rely upon in their brief is Disciplinary Counsel versus Friedman. In that case, an associate attorney notarized some blank signature lines on a mortgage and deed for Friedman's wife. Interestingly enough, the wife later signed an affidavit indicating that Friedman had the authority to sign her name there. Nonetheless, the court found a dishonest motive. It's interesting that respondent cites this case for the fact that the person, the associate attorney who actually did the notarization, was not prosecuted. I don't know how that stands as authority to support what respondent is arguing here. We have no indication, no explanation whatsoever as to why that particular attorney was not prosecuted. And to claim that that's authority for the proposition here, that the complaint against a respondent here should be dismissed, just doesn't hold any water in our opinion. For the reasons in our brief and the reasons I've tried to delineate here, we urge the court to adopt the well-reasoned and supported report and recommendation of the Board of Professional Conduct, find a violation here of 8.4C, and provide a public reprimand so that the message goes out to attorneys in Ohio and also to notaries public that you under no circumstances notarize a blank document. If there are no further questions, I thank the court for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Slipsky. Mr. Johnson.
Your Honor, Mr. Slipsky's first statement was that these, obviously a true statement, that the rules are designed to protect the public, not to sanction a violating lawyer. At page 42 of the transcript, relator stated, the reason we're here is not to protect the public via Mr. Maseko, but it's against future acts by other lawyers. So the rules aren't designed to make examples. They are designed to protect the public, and the relator has admitted the public doesn't need protected from Mr. Maseko. The notary statute itself requires intent in the prohibited acts. And the question by Justice DeWine hits it right on the head. The timing doesn't matter. According to relator, if the lawyer had signed the notarization form and then slid it across the boardroom table for his client to sign, he would have violated 8.4C, because at the moment he executed the notarization, the client hadn't signed it yet. That is a ridiculous conclusion. And in Mecklenburg, it is simply untrue to say that there was no misrepresentation. Mecklenburg signed a form under penalty of perjury that had an untrue statement in it. It said that he wasn't cited in any other case and that his license hadn't been suspended in any state. Both of those statements were untrue. The board's decision and the court's decision was that there was no intent in making that misrepresentation. So the misrepresentation wasn't erased by the advice of counsel. The intent was.
Mr. Johnson, it seems like your colleague says, though, that the import of this document makes it different from Mecklenburg because a notarized document is self-authenticating, and that Mecklenburg's document was not of the same import.
Well,
does that matter?
It doesn't, because there isn't a special rule in the Ohio Rules of Professional Conduct dealing with notaries. We're in a basket that covers fraud, deceit, dishonesty, and misrepresentation. And so there was no harm to anyone because there's no evidence this document was ever used. And again, if we're talking about the notary statutes, the notary statute of prohibited acts prohibits signing a blank document with intent that it be used. And that's not present here.
But counsel, but if we have found that there is no violation, doesn't this open the door for lawyers to sign or notarize documents that are unsigned?
No, Justice Stewart, I don't think it does. This is a very peculiar situation. What it says is that you are not committing a misrepresentation by making a mistake. You still.
But is it a mistake when your client knew when he notarized a document that it had not been signed?
It's a mistake when he intends to see it signed. The intention is to give a client a document or a third party a document and say, here, it's notarized, just sign it and use it. Mm-hmm. You still can't do that. This case won't change that a bit. And the fact that he was only charged and found guilty of one violation doesn't mean, as I said, that this conduct doesn't fall under a different rule. But just like with criminal law, you have to be charged with the statute that you violated. If they charge you with the wrong thing, they can't find you guilty because they think you've done something wrong. And finally, I think you start a dangerous precedent by saying that any misrepresentation, no matter how innocent, violates 8.4C. As Justice DeWine pointed out, a negligent misrepresentation to a court would then be chargeable not under Rule 3.3A, but under 8.4C, which to my knowledge has never been done.
All right, counsel, this was one incident that your client was involved with, presumably.
Correct.
If this was a habit, a pattern, there was testimony that this is how he approached all of his in-home visits with potential clients or clients. What'd you say to that?
That would obviously be more troubling, because then you start to question his intent. Is his testimony that he didn't sign the intend these to be signed and used truthful? Or is he making a misrepresentation to try and cover what his practice really was? Just draft the document, sign them, drop them off, and let the clients go on their way. So
well,
I think
it's also a cumulative violation of the notary standards.
That's true.
Which is, you know, like a cumulative violation of speeding tickets, et cetera, which is, you know, something we would look at.
Absolutely, Chief Justice, I agree.
Okay. All right.
I'm down to seconds. I thank you all for your time.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. We'll take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision. Marshall, will you adjourn court, please?
Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.